about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff. Glad to be with you on this January the 11th on the West Coast, now January the 12th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. Got to apologize, we had some communication problems on my end. Got them squared away, and even though we got a late start, we're going to be on topic and discussing pertinent issues going on in these trying times. Well, lots going on, and at the same time, what are we hearing about it? Coming off of a rather what seems like a short weekend, people immersed in professional sports around the world, especially in the United States. You've got college basketball going on, professional basketball, football playoffs now underway. People are kind of paying attention to what's going on. Global warming is in doubt at this certain time, especially with record snowfall in many areas. And people are just kind of getting the message now that something is messed up. Certainly in the financial arena, there's been a lot going on. British journalist and publisher of the International Currency Review, Christopher Story, has been writing about more financial shenanigans. Evidently, something is being done, yet the media is not talking about it. Politicians in Washington, D.C. are not talking about it. We hear all of these stories that the economy is turning around. Nothing could be further from the truth. The flu pandemic seems to have taken a backseat in some respects, although they keep saying the numbers are going up, 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 up. We just don't know. However, there are some who have been paying attention to these types of issues and many others that are having some sort of impact on these trying times, because while all this is supposedly happening, the truth is coming out about many things. Tonight's guest is a naturopathic doctor, and he is also a talk show in his own right. He hosts a show called The Story Behind the Story, and he's a frequent guest here on Evident Footprints. Our good friend, Dr. H. Ruat. True, welcome to the show.
I'm glad you got your power issues all taken care of there, and doggone it, it's hard to get power when the lines are frozen.
Oh, it's cold, let me tell you. And every shovel full of snow, let me tell you, you ask yourself, thank God we have global warming.
Well, you know, it's as you know, I've had my friend Dr. Wayne Pickering on in this series, and same with Drew Raines, and he keeps saying, "Well, come on down to Florida and escape the cold," but no. He said it was 20 degrees this week, and even Orlando had snow showers, for heaven's sake. So global warming, well, bring some more on, I guess.
Yes, exactly. Well, there's so much that you've been talking about on your show. You had some interesting shows recently with Gail Smith, who has been talking about things, visions that she's had, things she's seen happening. Of course, more people are waking up in a sense, and yet there are those who have been talking about these things for a number of years. And you wonder if we create these things because of our thoughts. In metaphysical circles, people tend to say that, yes, we are co-creators. And I think by our inaction or our lack of responsibility in many areas, we do create, or we allow certain things to be created. Certainly, the chaos that seems to be going on around the world, although it's not reported, we feel it. And people are certainly acting as though on some level they're sensing something's wrong, and they want to get to the bottom of it. I did 2 hours of a show with Drew today where we talked about fictitious genealogies, and we did talk a lot about the research that I've done, but I'm listening to others, especially in the financial arena, and finding out that much of what's going on is being explained to us in a way that doesn't even make sense. It's just like the research that I've done. When you really go down the rabbit hole and compare the historical facts that we've been taught over and over and over again and find out that they're lies, you become a bit intolerant, I think, of what they're saying now, because things are really screwed up. And these reports of all the embezzlement, the theft, or the pure design that's going on to intentionally destroy this country is something to be upset about. What are your thoughts on all this?
Well, I heard you mention Christopher Story and his paper. I got the same paper emailed to me, and I take exception with a number of things. There's some things that are right on that he wrote about, but as far as Obama being the white knight coming in on his his steed when he signed off that executive order, it was nothing to do with what Story, the spin Story put on it. That's that Interpol authorization, the executive order, is all to do, is from my viewpoint, with the giving the teeth to the international police force run by the Chinese to take and possess the assets of America when the time comes. And that's what we discussed with Gail Smith. And as early as 1991, Don, she had these night visions where she was shown the events that were that were likely to occur, and of course no dates or times were given, but when I first talked with her in the early 90s, when you have a total worldwide economic collapse with a series of devastating earthquakes and then followed by martial law because there's so much rioting and civil unrest, combined with deadly viruses being released, everything that she saw almost 20 years ago now, Don, that at the time we thought was just quite rambling, frankly. I just thought it was, just a meaningless dream in many ways, because I couldn't see it happening then, given the state of affairs then. But everything that she had seen is basically coming into a perfect storm with the end result, as she said, which again, 20 years earlier, she said was a massive depopulation of the planet. And most definitely that appears to be the goal. And it's not even hidden anymore, Don. It's talked about in mainstream media. The Los Angeles Sunday Times of last May, the London Times reporting the meeting of George Soros and his elite group, all plotting and planning this to be fully implemented by the end of 2012, which, by my calculations, that's 24 months. Not too much time left.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. I mean, we're not really getting all the facts on this. But I do have to say, on some level, a lot of the information that investigators like Chris Story or Bob Chapman are getting are coming from some of the same connections, let's say, the international connections. the bottom line is that there's such a large amount of control being exerted on this country. It's evident that they're trying to destroy the economy to sort of get it at fire sale rates, if you want to call it that. The impedance of the prosperity funds that may be out there, and I think half of what we are reading, if not more, is bogus information. There are a lot of websites that I notice people won't identify who they are. They won't say where they're getting their information. They won't really say what's going on, and yet we're supposed to take the information that they're publishing as the gospel truth. And it creates for a lot of confusion, and I guess, you know, it comes down to what we've been saying, asking people to use some discernment, use some common sense, and do a little bit of research or a little bit of networking with some other people to see if we're not all being hoodwinked. Definitely things are screwed up. We can admit that. And they want to keep ramming all this new legislation down our throats. And I take issue with it on the basis of all the fraudulent nature of who people are and what is really going on behind the scenes. The disinformation is certainly not helping either. And the permissive nature of all of this corruption. How can the SEC willingly, knowingly participate in fraud when their whole job is to monitor it and prevent it from happening? In the stock markets, for example, there are so many people that are willing to be bribed, or have put themselves in a position to be compromised that we really can't trust what government represents, what it was intended to represent, and certainly the corporate media machine is experiencing a new birth on the heels of all of this financial corruption. So I guess what I'm trying to do is sort it out, and I'm sure the listeners want to do that as well.
Well, yeah, I really don't know what the answer is, Don, except for, you know, maybe short of armed resistance. It's going to come down to that when they think they can come after the guns. I mean, look back at the American Revolution. I mean, what really spurred that the skirmish, the first battle there at Lexington and Concord, if you remember, the British were marching to confiscate the militia's guns, and it all looks very very similar to what's going to happen this April, you know, with the IRS wanting to take all the information on your guns and what's owned, and I mean that is what has the IRS got to do with gun control now? To have that be part of the questionnaire of the tax returns is just a very ominous sign. Again, it goes back to what happened in the 1930s in Germany and Austria. It was clear that the exact same agenda, the same blueprint for total socialist control and dictatorship is surely setting in motion. And ladies and gentlemen, if you think it can't happen here in America, well, that's exactly the same thing that the German people said at the time. Well, you know, it's there's no atrocities happening. You know, we're not going to be hurting our country, destroying our country, and like look at the devastation that occurred. And that the parallels between America today and the 1938 Weimar Republic and Austria is just absolutely parallel. The more you look at it, there's at least a dozen strong similarities to the unemployment figures, to the hyperinflation that's going to be seen soon, and the charismatic leader that wants to implement government to take over everything. Keep in mind that the German auto industry was nationalized and taken over. Then the banks were nationalized by the socialist, not National Socialist Party, the Nazis. And the coup de grace was universal health care, where the state provided free health care to every citizen. And, the parallels are just absolutely stunning.
Yes, yes. You wonder, are they just following the history books as a script, or is it just that it's the same people behind using the same method as
well,
a coup?
They knew how well the destruction happened in the 1930s and 1940 Europe, so it's a great, great blueprint. You know, it's, and again, people seem to forget. I had Pastor Scott Lively, the author of The Pink Swastika, is my guest last Friday. He did a fantastic job. And ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't yet heard of that book or read it, I strongly suggest you go to his website. You can actually read it there in its full entirety on the website. It's, again, called The Pink Swastika. And he does a masterful job. I mean, just looking at the historical reprinted pamphlets and documents and photos, letters within the Third Reich. It's very clear that the upper echelon of the Nazi Party were homosexuals with violent tendencies, okay? And again, we can parallel what's happening today with the bisexual president we have. His tryst with Larry Sinclair and others is becoming well documented now. But where's the public outcry? You know, we thought the morality of Clinton and Lewinsky scandal was bad. Well, what about these homosexual drug liaisons that are going on? Jennifer Flowers and the scandal, where people were talking about that during the Clinton era. My God, what about Larry Sinclair and the homosexual orgies they had together? Nobody is pressing this home. That's what blows me away.
Oh yeah, I guess you could throw in the pedophile rings too, that are being run by well-known politicians, right in Washington D.C. The cover-ups and all the associated murders that have gone along with those cover-ups. The Franklin cover-up being one. Right there in Lincoln, Nebraska, where this Larry King, not the TV talk show host, but another man who was known as a mover and a shaker in the minority world there in Lincoln, Nebraska in the late 1980s, was caught having embezzled something like $38 million from a local bank. And running the bank into the ground, and when John DeCamp, the former congressman who was an attorney, and did some investigating and actually discovered this ring that was being run out of Boys Town, and all the abducted young boys and a few girls who were put into this ring. Associated with powerful names in Washington, D.C., and all of that was covered up, did come out in the newspaper, came out in the Washington Times. They sent the intelligence agencies out to pick up all the newspapers that had been delivered. Didn't get them all, though. A few of them got into some hands, and DeCamp wrote about that, did a documentary film on that. You had, I think it was William Colby, who was the head of intelligence at that time, assassinated, was certainly in communication with DeCamp. You have the smear campaign on Ted Gunderson, who really investigated this phenomenon nationwide. The extent that they go to cover this up is amazing. So, and that has taken, basically, that's become the character model for the black ops side of the CIA and law enforcement agencies as well.
Yeah, it's always been with us, and again, we documented on this show and other papers on the secret treaty of Fort Hunt, where following the conclusion of the war in Europe, the Nazi Gestapo, the Nazi homosexuals, let's face it, that's who they are, were basically brought under Operation Paperclip and to head the CIA, which is just an absolute dark black stain in American history. Of course, we have John F. Kennedy finding out how really depraved and degenerate the whole thing was, and the danger it posed to the American Republic, and he publicly declared that he was going to take the legs out of the Central Intelligence Agency, and Dulles and the rest of them would be exposed. They had to kill the president, and that's exactly the reason for it. And my golly, you know, it's just ongoing to this day. Just so happens that the CIA chief at that time was George Herbert Walker Bush, living in Dallas. His role is there's no doubt about his role in the assassination. There's no doubt that he was elevated to the head of the CIA for as a reward, and then, of course, eventually put into the presidency. So in the Bush crime family, there's been many books written about it, many articles, but yet nothing seems to change. They still continue to do their deeds, and it's not a matter of Republican versus Democrat. They're both two phony sides of a counterfeit coin these days. And anyway, yeah, that's the reality, Don. And this criminal cabal just seems to be getting bolder and bolder. How do you justify the false flag of Christmas Day, where this idiot we're led to believe that this person that's on the red list, so to speak, and is not allowed to fly into any airport in the UK, just suddenly gets walked through customs and all of that in the Netherlands, comes into Detroit, has plastic explosives in his underwear without a blasting cap, and now the latest news is 350 airports are to be outfitted with this T-ray scanner, the full body scanner. Now, ladies and gentlemen, what's wrong with that picture? Well, never mind that all of the research I've done, the full body scanner operates through something called T-rays as opposed to X-rays, and all of the information I've read on T-rays show that it's about 500 times more potentially dangerous than X-rays as far as the damage it can and will do to DNA. Basically unzips the DNA and scrambles it. Now, I don't know about you, Don, but that's it for me. I'm not traveling on any airplanes, and as long as they have that damn scanner being planned, I will not expose my body to such an array as that. I just won't. And it just seems funny that Michael Chertoff, the past director of Homeland Security, just happens to be positioned to make millions of dollars on the sale of those T-ray scanners. Yeah, they needed a false flag to justify the expenditure of so many millions of dollars. It's just an absolutely criminal thing.
Yes, and they pretend like this is something, as if they discovered some loophole in the system, that has to be corrected, when in reality, you know, it's problem, reaction, solution.
Yeah.
But by design, this was all planned ahead of time. How does this equipment come out on the heels of, this event?
and it just happens to be all manufactured and ready to be installed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's disgusting what's going on. I've got to tell you, over the past week, I've been redesigning my website and trying to overcome a few issues, some problems in that regard. A lot of websites are being hacked, or the internet systems infrastructure is being hacked, and I'm hearing about a lot of other people go through it. And of course, I went through it to an extent, and I had to literally rebuild certain aspects of my website. And so, in putting the information back together in a presentation called a web page. I had to literally go word by word through all of my research and repost everything. Got it up. I had everything backed up. It was just a pain in the neck to spend the time redoing something that was already completed. And after I was finished, I picked up a couple of things that I had discovered in my research that warranted a little bit further research. You mentioned the long-legged Mac Daddy in Washington, D.C., and you asked the rhetorical question, when are people going to wake up? I did a little more research on some of the alleged code numbers that went with what I determined was phony documentation to try to make it look like the alleged grandfather on the maternal side of the family was in the U.S. military. You would think that you could get this out of a standard database or a government database. I'm speaking of the military record of Stanley Armour Dunham. And I revisited the whole issue while I was literally word for word reposting everything on my site. And I checked on another number that I had intended to look at, and it was a reference number attached to the word location, and there were two series of numbers in that article. This is in The Three Stooges Go to Washington, Part A, where I actually display this this military record or this alleged record. And you have this preposterous story of Dunham going to Fort Leavenworth to enlist on December 18th of 1941. And then there are two other records of him again enlisting at Wichita, Sedgwick County, at board number 3, that's the enlistment board. And then 6 months later, that was in January, by the way, of 1942. Then 6 months later, in the month of June, at Augusta, Butler County, at board number 2. And no one enlists three times. If he was in the Army as of December 8th, he would have been going through basic training. But just in a matter of a couple of weeks, he's re-enlisting in another location.
Huh.
And then 6 months later, in another location. Now, at the end of this document posted on the Kansas State Historical Society, there's a number, location 31-04-08-02, and then the word TO, and then 31-04-08-05. That number references the U.S. Navy Department. Now, what's the Navy holding the Army enlistment record for, or the Army military record? It's totally bogus. It's probably through the Department of Naval Intelligence that that this was conducted. The Navy keeps coming up regarding the remote viewing program, things going on in space. You would think the Air Force would be involved with that, but no. The Department of the Navy handles that. And all the PSYOPs and the connection is through the CIA. And Dunham, I had determined, was a foreign agent, in fact, the whole family. And I went into great detail attaching them to the banking families of Hawaii. Is it any wonder that they claim that he was born in Hawaii? But these were just spies. That's the point I'm making. And this is how they were infiltrating the government. They were actually in Oklahoma City, which is where they brought Operation Paperclip, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So you wonder about the false flag events, like the J.P. Murrah building being blasted. And it wasn't Timothy McVeigh that did it. Obviously, McVeigh didn't have the opportunity to go in the building and plant bombs, some which were seen on the first CNN reports after the explosion. There were some undetonated bombs seen on TV cameras. It's amazing. But revisiting this research by necessity revealed many more things. Also, the things that I had discovered about Michael Rockefeller again come into three or four more types of scrutiny on the basis of the accounts that they gave. This guy supposedly went less than 6 months after graduating from Harvard in 1960, we're talking June, less than 6 months would put him probably in October of 1960. He's claimed to have gone on this expedition in the southern highlands of New Guinea with Robert Gardner, the film producer, and they claim that Rockefeller was the still photographer and the sound recordist of the filming of the movie Dead Birds. Well, I've determined that the photographs which represent that event are all compilations. They're all phony. And no one can convince me otherwise. In fact, I'm fairly certain most people that have read the research can see that those photographs are phony, as are the long-legged Mac Daddies. And people don't seem to be troubled by the fact that we've been outright lied to. And in Rockefeller's case, now there's been a book written that says that this 6 month event that began in November really was from April to August of 1961, and that immediately afterward, Rockefeller, regardless of the time the movie was shot, went to visit the Asmat tribe. And we're talking possibly, if this would have been true, it would have been a few hundred miles away from the location of the filming. Would it take anywhere from 3.5 to 7 months for him to travel that far? Impossible. Yet this is the story that we were told. And it goes back to the Time magazine reports that claimed that Nelson Rockefeller initially started a research right away, a rescue mission. The original accounts of TV show produced by Alex Pamasanoff, a former CBS script writer and producer of major shows for CBS News and the CBS network, indicates that Rockefeller was either eaten by sharks or I'm forgetting some of it. It's so ridiculous. Or cannibals. That he would have made this 3 mile swim, but then they claim they make the rescue shortly after, the next day, 22 hours later, and there's a major search launched right there by the Dutch authorities. But they say it took 3 days for the news to get out to Nelson Rockefeller in New York. Now, did it really take 3 days back in 1961 for news to travel from one government to another? Absolutely not. But there was definitely a cover-up going on. Rockefeller was moved out of the way on purpose. They were faking his death. You really have a year and a half of lost time before this alleged death. They even said that he was probably eaten by cannibals. If they were cannibals, certainly he would have known that, having dealt with them before, because they describe how many times he went there to pick up artifacts from these people. These people were making wood carvings. They weren't eating other people.
Mm-hmm.
But they put these stories out there as propaganda. So I can look at the Time magazine reports. I can look at the Life magazine spreads that were done. I can look at the press conferences that Nelson Rockefeller ran. His wife, Mary, is alleged to have divorced him over this issue, but that he wouldn't launch a search for the missing son. And yet, we're told that as soon as he found out, he invested $38,000 in renting airplanes to go out there to go looking for him. And his words before the media belie the truth of what actually was happening. Totally. He was stammering and stuttering. The word was that he didn't want to ruin his political career. Well, eventually made it to vice president under Gerald Ford after they got rid of Nixon. That was some years later, but nonetheless, on the heels of this event, we had the Kennedy assassination. In roughly 2 years, 2 years and 5 days after the supposed disappearance of Michael Rockefeller, none of it makes any sense. Even the follow-up searches for him, one has been made into a movie about Bill Macklin's search. His receiving information from someone that said they saw Michael Rockefeller alive, and he goes out and documents this. Now, there's been a movie made by Agamemnon Films about that. I've debunked Macklin's aspect of the investigation, which was also included in that 1977 episode of In Search of Michael Rockefeller, where it's staged. These photographs that they show us are staged. And on a little bit of video that somebody shoots 16 years later, we're supposed to assume that that's true because they put these pictures in front of us and told us a story while we're looking at the pictures. When it was planned to be something totally different. Now, why disappear someone like that? Why, you know, he's the son and the heir of a billionaire, and he can't make phone calls. He's either making this trip to the Azmat tribe, either in a 40-foot dugout canoe or in a catamaran. Now, there's quite a bit of difference between the two. The thing is capsized 20 miles at sea, yet when they rescue him, you can see the shoreline right there in the pictures, right. A few hundred yards away. This is how preposterous this story is and how it's been peddled to the American public and really the rest of the world. The guy they rescue is bone dry, shirt creased, clean shaven. Looks like he just got out of the barber shop. his alleged companion, mm-hmm. and again, we're just supposed to accept this. I don't know about you, but if you were wearing a button-down shirt with rolled-up sleeves and spent 22 hours in rough seas that just capsized the 40-foot catamaran that you were riding in, what would you look like after 22 hours?
Pretty haggard.
Yes, and well, that's not the case at all. I mean, this guy's balancing himself on an airplane pontoon and talking to the media that are right there in eyeshot, you know, in distance of the shoreline. You can see the trees right there, but this rescue was supposed to have taken place 20 miles at sea. And I'm sure you've been out at sea. You can't see 20 miles from where you are in the ocean. We're on any body of water.
Exactly. Yeah, it's quite a scandal, but what do we do about it? I mean, it's bad enough getting people to even question this lunatic Nazi that's in the White House, let alone exposing it. There's a complicity that's just as bad as the actual crime itself, Don. As you know, it's very, very unfortunate.
Well, what's amazing is that there's this underlying connection to the Rockefeller family, mm-hmm. with the Dunhams, with the banks, with the oil companies. All of this connects to the Rockefellers. And
yes.
Every step of the way, and you know, Columbia University. If the guy went there, why is it that no one from that prestigious school, considered one of the best universities in our country and around the world, why is it that they're not able to keep records, or that they're not willing to show records? See? Why is it that they had someone like Henry Kissinger as a professor there and happens to be the long-legged Mac Daddy's handler? Doesn't that sort of strike a chord of coincidence?
Yep, especially when you look at it from the whole macro worldview. You know, he appears out of nowhere, really groomed, and a lot of this ties in again to what Lively wrote in the Pink Swastika. Again, it's quite common in those upper circles, either, you know, the Thule Society, dating back to Sparta and the Greeks. It just parallels so much what they want to do in their agenda. And you have Obama being mentored. Well, it's more like being sodomized by Kissinger and Brzezinski from a very early age, and getting him prepped for the job he has to do as, you know, bringing in the new order. You know, the parallels to what happened during the 1930s in Germany, the homosexual part of the equation, you know, they're just a flat out amazing reality.
Oh yes, I could go on. There's probably hundreds more of synchronicities between these different stories, but at every turn we have the Rockefellers there. David Rockefeller, a graduate from Harvard, he would have to have Barack Obama be from a graduate of Harvard University, yet no one there recognizes him. No one recalls him. No one at Columbia University recalls him.
Right.
I've written about the connection with Occidental University and the Bishop banking family of Hawaii. That's a major portion of my research in that area too, and I show where they got the name Dunham and why the name Dunham was used, and it points directly to the Bank of Hawaii. So there's a lot to be discovered. I guess this is because I spent the last week reinitiating my site. I spent the time. The first thing I did was get this research reposted, mm-hmm. Another thing I noticed is that many of the conclusions I drew in the earlier part of the articles actually became quite evident as I got to the next issue in the series, and certainly by the end of the series, everything seems to pan out. None of these stories that supposedly support historical events can be supported by fact. That's the amazing thing. None of them can be supported by fact. And they're actually supported by bogus photography, phony documents. You may find this interesting. We heard during the Orly Tates and Phil Berg and Leo D'Onofrio lawsuits about these enrollment and adoption documents that occurred in Indonesia, specifically a school enrollment. I happen to have done some research on the document itself, just examining the document. And there is a document that is purported to be Lolo Satoru taking him to school and signing him up in the school where he learned Islam. Certainly the word Islam is written there in English. Now, you're in a foreign country and everything is written in the Indonesian language, and yet when it comes to certain facts, they're using English words as if that was designed for our consumption. You see, we're supposed to interpret these documents as being part of a legitimate trail that proves that he lived in this place and he went to school there, and we shouldn't be questioning any of this because the documents from these official institutions are legitimate. Well, there is a registration form at the school, which is really not a registration form at the school. It's done on a piece of graph paper, and on the back of the paper, there is a reference to the words in Indonesian, scores and points. It's a test score paper that this alleged school registration paper was done on. And you can read backwards through the paper when they photographed it or scanned it, because it appears to be to have been constructed with a piece of carbon paper. In other words, you take a paper that has printing on it and turn it upside down, and the graph, the grid of the graph paper is on both sides. That's a phenomenon that occurs on any graph paper that you get, especially in the 1960s. They printed graphs on both sides. And if they're using that paper to score tests or let's say to score tests, because that's what the words were in Indonesian on the back of the document. The word scores and points. And now you have these fields on the back of the paper. You have thick black lines in rectangular boxes. When you blow up the document, the lines do not connect. They're actually separate. Someone actually drew this at a small scale, and it's skewed. It's not a professional printing job whatsoever. If you look at the print on the what is really the front side of the paper turned over, you can see it runs a straight line across the top of the paper. It was professionally printed. On the flip side, where they entered all this enrollment information that Lolo Satoru supposedly enrolled Barack Obama in this Muslim school, you can see that the lines are skewed and they're not parallel to the lines. Plus, it's on a piece of graph paper. I don't know about you. I recall when I was in school, for certain math or science classes, we had to use graph paper when we were plotting graphs or
geometry.
Oh yeah, or for geometry, we had to and trigonometry. We had to do these layouts and formulas using graph paper as a means of giving us a guide or a template for neatness. Mm-hmm. And they didn't even flip this paper over and follow the lines on the graph paper, which may have helped to obscure it. Somebody just hodgepodge put this thing together and said, oh, here we are. We have this perfect replica of the backside of a piece of graph paper with lines drawn on it and information imparted via a piece of carbon paper. And that's an official school document. That's an official government document showing that Barack Obama lived in Jakarta, Indonesia in 1968. Totally fraudulent. But these documents actually deserve this type of scrutiny, because when you get down to it, they're phony as heck. They're as phony as the long-legged Mac Daddy sitting there in the White House. And it certainly adds more credibility to Larry Sinclair's story and anyone else that's come out with information. Certainly the hundreds of students at Columbia University that do not recall Barack Obama ever having been there, that do not recall the alleged racism and, you know, the scrawling on the walls of racial epithets. Again, you know, we have more lies, and we're supposed to go along with this. And it smacks really of a poorly written KGB-sponsored theatrical movie, tell you the truth. It's like a farce. And they're probably laughing as everybody's eating this up, believing that all of this stuff is true. So I wanted to make that point because revisiting all this stuff, there are many other red flags behind not just the research, but the whole story that warrant an investigation. And you have a whole Congress and Senate complicit in pushing this guy through, trying to rubber stamp his eligibility when they know perfectly well that half of them probably went through the same process. I've done 5 genealogies on political figures, and each one is not who they say they are.
Hmm.
That's five for five.
Well, it got, I think back to what this guy named George Green was saying back, golly, in the 90s, when I had him on my radio show back then. He was pretty out there. George Green would say that every president since Johnson has really, you know, he says they're clones, they're not real people. And I don't know, you know, where he gets all that from, but at least they're doubles. You know, there's more than one person filling the gap. Now, how he knows that to be true and the documentation of that's just it's pretty sketchy, Don. But where there's smoke, there's fire, so to speak, and just amazingly strange things have been happening since that era.
Well, yeah, I've certainly found this out about Eisenhower, so we can even go before Kennedy's time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a synchronicity in that research as well regarding the McCann clan, which became McCain over here, and the year 1924. Edward VII into the U.S. Navy brought forth John McCann Sr., Albert McCann, who became John Sidney McCain Jr., and then certainly Senator John Sidney McCain III. They did this just like they did with Eisenhower through the Panama Canal Zone. Now, the person in this country that would have been complicit in facilitating that whole operation with Edward VII of England and Franz Joseph I, who I determined is the father of Eisenhower, the illegitimate father of the Eisenhower clan, the whole clan, he went through the Panama Canal Zone too. The difference is that they put Eisenhower in the Army and they put the McCanns in the U.S. Navy. And they both came to the United States in 1924 via the Panama Canal Zone. The one person that was impacting the Panama Canal Zone earlier and, let's say, around the turn of the century was Teddy Roosevelt. Teddy Roosevelt. And he was in a position as the police commissioner of New York as far back as 1895 to start infiltrating the government or the country with these agents. I learned this in my most recent research that Roosevelt was the New York City police commissioner. And so he certainly could wield some authority over the port of New York and New Jersey at that time. I don't know if they were affiliated separately or if Ellis Island was just being run as an extension of the Federal Trade Commission. But certainly the things that I found when I stumbled upon some Eisenhower names that had passenger records, when I clicked on the passenger manifest button, I got a screen that said they're having communication problems. Please call this number in New York or leave my number in the best time to call. My God, I just want to look at a passenger manifest. Why do I need to call the office? But this happened during my SHRF research as well. And during my McCain or McCann research, the same idiosyncrasies came up on that website. There's certain documents that they do not want anybody to see that implicitly you can make the connection. But it didn't matter. I made it in many other ways that I could determine that just on the basis of a black screen with big white letters telling me that they were having some kind of a problem on their website, that I should call and get in touch with them. It's ludicrous. Okay, I actually put that that page in my Eisenhower piece. I had to. It was too funny. I had seen it too many times. And to just make the claim that that's what that is one thing. I had to bring that page up. And anyone can go there and see, we are experiencing service delays. Please try again or contact our customer service office at contactus@ellisisland.org or 212-561-4588 with your phone number and best time to reach you. I mean, is it that important? Is it that important? And you know, many of these pages have been replaced. These passenger manifests have been replaced intentionally with misleading information. You're expecting to see line one of the passenger manifest, and they bring up passenger 2,450 is the page that they have up there in its place. Certainly, the people responsible for documenting this stuff know that there were people doing genealogical work on passenger arrivals and immigrants coming into this country, going back 100 or 150 years. Why is it that every time you're looking at somebody who's infiltrated the government, those documents are skewed on that website? It's quite intentional. And you need a certain element of discernment to figure out what's going on, but come on. I think you would see that when you create a fictitious history and you're bringing the agent into the country, they don't want you to know that agent came into the country, regardless of the name they use. But they were brazen enough to use the German spelling of Eisenhower to come in. And I was able, even through my research, to match photographs of other people representing so-called Americans, people from Austria or Austria-Hungary. I've totally debunked who Eisenhower was. I'm certain of that. All of a sudden now, we have a flurry of Dwight Eisenhower articles being written. Why do you think that's happening?
Well, it's Elmer Fudd's holiday.
Yes.
Crazy wabbit.
Yeah. Now, you've been doing a series of shows about what's been happening in our closing moments, and I apologize for taking up all the time, but
it's very interesting.
I thought, you know, some of this deserved some repetition here, because mm-hmm. I did make some discoveries on follow-up that not only show that my original findings were accurate, that when you go on to try to support the historical side of this, it falls apart. Under this type of scrutiny, it falls apart. Eisenhower did not have an American mother. They used the photograph of a young Hungarian woman from Bukovina. Do you remember the show I called into some weeks ago? About a month ago, Drew Raine's show, in fact. And I told you, I am fairly convinced, and I'm going to get to the bottom of this. And I did. That's exactly where he was born. That's exactly where he is from. And how they can publish photos of our American president, our 34th president, how they can put his picture up on a national website, And in a presidential museum in Abilene, Kansas, and tell us that he's an American when he's wearing an Austrian army uniform. I don't understand that. Other than they, I guess they just think that we're just plain stupid.
Or maybe they think it was a Halloween costume. He's going to a ball or something. I don't know. Strange stuff, I'll tell you. They just have to control at the highest level, it surely appears. And if they step out of line and take initiative on their own, as JFK did, they're taken out in a coup. I mean, that's really what that was. It wasn't it was a takeover, a coup. In America, for heaven's sakes. And so the Warren Commission keeps everything locked tight. All the evidence is sealed up for many, many years. And, oh my goodness, you know, most Americans just accept it and go on watching their ball games.
Yeah. Well, I think we're getting to a point where even watching the ball games has become ridiculous for those that watch.
Right.
The way these events are officiated smacks of, again, exactly what the government's doing to the people, making these irrational decisions. You have 20,000 people in an arena or 100,000 people seeing an event take place, and the officials that are there to monitor this don't see it. You know, this is what's going on. Now, this, of course, steers billions of dollars of gambling money in a particular predetermined direction. So they have motives for doing this. But I think more than that, I think they're using that method further as another means of brainwashing people by giving us impossible outcomes. And forcing us to accept,
right,
you know,
right.
you don't have fairness, okay, occurring. You have these irrational decisions being made, and we're forced to swallow those. Okay, how does your local town's professional sports team losing affect your reality? Well, when you're brainwashed and that's all you live for, it really affects your reality. But what people don't see is it's just another aspect of the mass mind control, the mass conditioning that's going on, just like in religion, just like in education, and certainly accepting everything that's presented to us through the media. You've written a lot about that yourself.
You know? Oh, yes. And it's ongoing, and it, I don't know, Don, it's... it seems like we just keep preaching to the choir, and I guess that's like we said today with my guest Gail Smith. You know, we just got to do the best we can, and if you know, if even one person wakes up, I mean, that's a change the course of history. It's hard to gauge, but we'll just keep fighting and searching for the truth.
Yes. Well, I appreciate you being on the show. Sorry for taking up the whole.
Not at all. It's very, very interesting. And Don, I appreciate all the work that you've done, and hopefully you won't get too much frostbite as you go out. I tell you, it's absolutely a bitter, frigid cold here in Utah as well, and more cold on the way. So I mean, yeah. Setting records in many parts of the country.
Yeah, just don't tell Al Gore. We don't want him to have an emotional collapse over this.
Well, he's got some way to explain it out through the College of Angora.
Okay, well, maybe you're going to be on next week, next Monday. Maybe we can get you to go into some of the technologies that are being used to alter our reality. I'm particularly interested in having you share some of the Sound of Silence research that you did.
Oh yes, in fact, I'll be in Las Vegas lecturing at a group meeting there with Ted Gunderson. He'll be up, and Ted's doing well. I talked to him really quite a while tonight. In fact, I saw that you were trying to call in, but I was on the phone with him, and he's 81 years old and diagnosed with bladder cancer, but still doing fine. I mean, fighting hard and fighting a good fight. That's wonderful.
Oh, yes. He's been on the show a few times. In fact, I'd like to have him on again soon. He's a wealth of information.
Yeah, great American. He's meeting with, he meets weekly with Michael Reconosciuto and keeps him up to speed with what's going on. The supercomputer, the Cray computer, the artificial intelligence, it's reaching new heights, Don. The NSA is moving their underground headquarters from Fort Meade to here to Utah, for heaven's sakes. It's ongoing research. We talked about that a little bit today on my show with Gail, because it's literally going in across the street from her house.
Wow.
And she says it's just amazing how much excavation and, you know, tunneling is being done, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah. Why does everything like that have to go in tunnels?
Why, you know, why do we need NSA and a crazy supercomputer when we've got this benevolent, wonderful CIA and Homeland Security to protect us?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, we can go into a whole a new topic for another hour of that.
Thanks so much, Don, and God bless you and be safe, and we'll talk to you next week.
Yes, you too. And your website, if you would give that out for our listeners, by the way.
It's www.m as in mother, earth, emminerals.com.
MotherEarthMinerals.com.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
Dr. A. Truott, thank you so much for being on the show. Look forward to seeing you next week. In the meantime, you be safe and keep warm also.
Yes, God bless you, Don.
All right, you too. Folks, you've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and our special guest, Dr. A. Truott. His show airs, time zones. On the Eastern time zone, it airs from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 to 3 Central, noon to 2 Mountain, and 11 to 1 in the afternoon, West Coast time, at republicbroadcasting.org. The story behind the story. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network and blogtalkradio.com also for carrying this show. And over at bbsradio.com, special thanks to Donna Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound, and I'd like to thank you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join us again tomorrow for another great show. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.